Co-living is not roommates. We're not trying to make people best friends. People love their own individual space and still value it. This is not a frat house.
Welcome back to the Invest Her podcast. This is Liz Faircloth.
And I am Andressa Gadelli.
So many investors are looking to maximize their investments and increase their cash flow. But I don't know about you, but today's economy, this is getting harder and harder to do.
And that's when co-living space comes in as a strategy to solve this problem. In today's episode, we are interviewing Brandi Jones. She let go of midterm rental and short-term rental and is welcoming the co-living strategy. We're going to break down everything you need to know to see if that's a good fit for your business. So, Randy, you have a lot of experience short-term rentals. What made you make the decision to switch to co-living space?
Cash flow. One word, cash flow, made me switch. You know, short-term whereas they're on vacation, and so they destroyed my property. But when I realized that I could have long-term cash flow that was more than what I was making with short-term rentals, I knew very quickly I was all in on co-living.
So just for the listeners to get a very specific sense about the meaning of co-living, share with us, what is it?
Yes. So co-living is a rent by the room strategy that triples your monthly revenue.
Oh, I like that.
Simple, Brandi. It sounds so simple.
But let me ask you a question, because the women are like, well, but that might triple my energy too. I don't have triple energy.
Triple my headaches, right?
Triple my headaches, but I don't have the triple patience to deal with that. How have you been dealing with, it's a different strategy, right? Each strategy has its pros and cons. So in terms of time management, just that piece alone, time management on back and forth, what have you seen the difference between short-term rental and co-living folks? How do you call them? Guests? Tenants? How do you call them?
They're tenants. They're tenants, Andressa, because they sign a 12-month lease. And the time difference has been amazing. You know, with I'm here in Nashville, and so Nashville is so popular that I was having a short-term guest so often. So I was working every day. I was answering messages at 2 a.m. It was constant with the ding, ding, ding from Airbnb of guests wanting to book or just asking questions. With co-living, that decreased so much. And so now I'm probably working 4 hours a week responding to messages. All of that has been automated, and I'm sure we'll get into that. But I mean, it has decreased a lot.
Let's break that down further. I'm really curious. So talk to us about a property that you have where you've kind of converted it, if you will. Walk us through that process. Where is the property located? What type of property is it? How many people are you renting to from a co-living perspective? And then I got like 95 more questions, but let's start there.
Yeah. So I'm in Nashville, Tennessee. The property is a single family home. It has 7 people. It can hold 8. So, one person just left to get married. Whoop whoop. And, it has 7 people, and the PITI, so property insurance, all of those things is $1,600. And with, Airbnb, I was making right at $4,000 a month. So $3,900, $4,000 a month. With co-living, each room rents for $1,100.
Pooh.
And here's the thing, Liz.
What is the thing?
Here's the thing. I wanted to bring that number up even higher, right? Like, come on, and we're investors. They call me the cash flow queen for a reason. And so I was able to take the garage and put up one wall. And so that's how I was able to turn it to 8. So it makes, well, up until last week, it's 1100 per room times 8.
Wow. So let me For all the women that are like, wait a minute, let's start. Okay, I have a short-term rental, and let me consider that. Where should we start in terms of like legalities and registrations and fees and any type of permit? How did you go by that? Is there any specific regulation that you need to follow?
Yeah. Oh, I get this question so much. So co-living is legal in all 50 states. Now, if you go to add a wall and things like that, of course, that's that requires permits and things like that. But the act of co-living is completely legal everywhere. Whereas with short-term rentals, if you're, you know, the bans are coming down. I live in Nashville and they came down like a hammer here in Nashville as well, with short-term rentals. So, before I was squeezed out by the bans, I really started looking at co-living and decided to go all in. Don't regret a second. So no permits. No permits are required for co-living. You know, it's no different than if a house is, even if you take a three-bedroom home, let's say you have a three-bedroom home in, you know, the Midwest, and you don't change a thing. You're still making $1,100 a room. What is it? $3,300 a month. So that's, you can do that everywhere in America.
Now, let me ask you a question. The $1,100 a room, can I go get an apartment in Nashville for $1,100? I don't know your market rents. Is that lower than me now going, me as the renter, going to an apartment building and getting a, what, one bedroom?
Yeah, you definitely can get, just like any other city, you definitely can get an apartment for $1,100. But here's the thing. Your listeners know, you're going to get in a Class D neighborhood. You're going to get a Class C apartment. So sure. Yes, you can.
But not in the same neighborhood, not like equal to equal. So that is the advantage for them to live in your house because they are in a better neighborhood and they have the amenities of an entire house.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Also, another benefit is, you know, us millennials and Gen Zers with the tiny home movement, the tiny home boom, micro living, we just don't need a lot of space. As you would
exactly
think.
Brandy, we don't need really space. The Gen Z, like Liz and other
no
people.
Generation X for
oh,
the record.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
we're a baby boomer. You like to think of me as a baby boomer. I'm not a baby boomer.
Sorry.
Just you and I, Brandy. Just realize, millennials, hello, let's go.
So I think that's really important. And we always say that, Brandy, on our podcast and what we stand for is you got to really know your customer, right?
Yeah.
And every rental, every type of rental has a different customer with different pains, different interests. So the thought of me living in a co-living space, like I would be like, oh, I run as far as I possibly could. But that doesn't mean I'm the customer, right? Because I'm old. But that's the next question is, so tell us a little more about the demographic that is attracted to this co-living. Because what you're saying is there's a real opportunity here. So tell us more about them and their, you know, pains, challenges, and how you're solving it with co-living.
Yeah, it is a real demographic here. And that's why I'm so glad to be here with you guys to share it. So the demographic is college graduates. Imagine this. College graduates are in your town. You live in Myrtle Beach, and they do not want to go back to Ohio to live, right? They're tired of their parents. And they just graduated and really trying to see they've landed that job and they're trying to see what's next. So they don't have a dog. They don't have a spouse. They are still in the city. They love the city that they've lived for 4 or 6 years. And they really don't have a desire to go back. So that's the demographic. It's college students. It's single folks who want to stay in the city. You know, they still want to be in the city, but don't find as much value in those big high rises and things like that.
Let me ask you a question, right? When you're vetting a tenant for your single family house is one thing. When you're vetting a tenant, to a co-living space, I think there are a couple of layers, right? Because they all need to mesh, right?
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, like kind of like what you do like in college. Like, do you smoke? Are you a non-smoker? Are you a smoker? Do you stay up late? Does that, yeah.
How do you manage all those factors? Is it like all women or all men? There is a change. What has worked for you in terms of criteria on putting together a group of people that can get along?
Yeah, this is a great question. And it's important to remember that co-living is not roommates. This is not a roommate situation. So we're not trying to put people, we're not trying to make people best friends, right? People love their own individual space and still value it, right? This is not a frat house, okay? So yes, there is a different layer of criteria, but we're not getting to your favorite color and matching it up with Jim's favorite color. Okay, that's not what we're doing here. Yes, you separate genders can live in the same property, but here's how we do it. We offer them the benefits. We say, hey, this is a co-living house. It's no different. They were already living off campus for the most part, coming out of college. So it's really kind of just a smooth transition.
You're right. It's kind of like college housing, but like 2.0. Because in essence, that's what people are doing when they're renting to college students.
It's like a training to adulthood.
Yeah.
Transition. Is that bad? Oh, geez. The transition between one thing and the other, right? It's like, okay, now you go to 2.0. You know, you're going to respect everybody's privacy and co-living here. And then you graduate to your own thing later on.
Whenever you're ready. Whenever you're ready. And then we still, of course, we have rules and things like that that make a co-living run smoothly.
Give me some of the rules, because I like rules. what have you implemented to reduce your like stress level, your headache, reduce conflict among people? What have you implemented?
Yes, so I get this question a lot, and the first one is parking. The first one is parking. So the way I've kind of solved property at parking at my properties is everyone has their own space while you're there. Again, this is a 12-month lease. So it's important that people know where they're going. It just breaks down confusion. So you were asking a second ago, like, how many calls am I getting? Well, that's one call off the table because everyone knows where they park.
Let me ask you a clarification there. When you say that you said you have 7 garage spots or they park on the street, what exactly you're referring to when you say that they know where they should park?
Yeah, so the driveway holds 4. The way the driveway is made, there's 2 and then 2. And then there's an area, a small area for each car to pull out and leave. And then, so it's 4 spots and then the rest is on the street.
Do they pay extra to get a spot versus street?
Yeah. No. First come, first serve.
Got it.
Yeah, but there is something that they can pay extra for, and that is cleaning. So we are very big on cleaning, and each week, you know, everyone kind of takes their own space to clean. It kind of rotates, right? So it's not by person, it's by room. So whoever comes and goes, that room stays in place to clean for that week. Does that make sense?
Who cleans the common areas?
Everyone cleans the common areas, but it's still broken down by room. So room 5 cleans the common area on week 4, on the last week of the month.
Let's say Joey has a freaking bad memory and Joey forgets. Who handles that?
It's posted.
Oh, posted.
Yeah. Yeah, it's posted. And also it's given to them when they move in. It's posted. But here's what I was saying. You can opt out, because you were saying, do they have to pay extra? You can opt out and don't ever have to worry about it.
But then have to pay for that. If they opt out, they have to pay.
Right. Yeah. And so you can opt out of it and we'll come in and with cleaners and take over your spot. No problem.
So I think that, you know, I think people listening are like, that sounds like something I need to do a little more research on, but it sounds like an interesting approach and actually a very profitable approach. But the problem that a lot of people are having is finding the market, finding the deal still, right? So I'm curious, have you seen certain type of properties work really well for co-living versus others? Because the women listening are like, okay, how do I continually source properties? And I'm going to share a tool in a moment, but how do you identify this is a good property for co-living? This isn't going to make the cut. So is there anything that you can share that could be helpful for the listeners?
Yes, of course. The number one criteria when I'm looking at a deal is extra rooms, a basement, a finished garage. Can the garage be finished? You know, can I bring in a guy to add insulation to the, you know, and a wall? I'm looking for those extra rooms. I'm also creative with dining rooms. It's really simple to close up that dining room wall and make that a bedroom. So, I mean, you know, we're investors, we're creative. And so we make nothing, we make something out of nothing. So that's probably the main criteria that I'm looking for. I'm looking for those extra rooms.
And quite honestly, the extra rooms that could get ignored on the MLS, right?
Exactly.
And
who thought of these a form of dining room?
What's that?
Formal dining room is dead.
I know.
That's true. Well,
Liz, we should close that wall in your house and rent it
out. That's funny because my husband always says, you know, your invisible friend, because my invisible friend growing up was called Chalet. He always says, well, Chalet lives there. He always says he wants to do something with this space. I'm like, no, it's our formal dining room. We need to keep it. We fight all the time, but I digress. So back to finding deals.
The formal dining room was dead.
I'm not going to listen to that. I want to share a quick resource. One of our preferred partners, it's called Deal Flow. And what I love about what they're doing, and I want to share this in particular, what we're talking about, Brandy, with finding deals, is that they were all of their finding deal processes is through AI. So it's through powered by AI. And what they are able to do now, which is super, super cool, is scour through the MLS to find these type of properties that could be great investment opportunities based on the criteria, like you're saying, basement, certain square foot, that you can create this extra space. And not only find the deal on the MLS where most people are ignoring these properties, maybe for single family homes, but could be great for co-living or for, you know, maximizing the space, they're able to then get into conversations with listing agents, AI, which is super cool because it cuts down on sourcing new deals. So we're going to put the link in the show notes, but I really wanted to mention that resource in particular to what we're talking about, because what most people are ignoring right now, there's opportunity. And that's exactly what we're talking about. So I just thought it was a perfect resource called Deal Flow. We'll put the link in the show notes, but really super, super resource there.
So Randy, I don't want to give the impression to women it's all perfect, right? How do you handle conflict because you're dealing with people, right?
Yes. Who are sharing space.
Yes.
They're sharing a space. And I understand you don't want to get into people's business and you're trying to establish rules of engagement and this type of thing. But let's say something happened. Somebody left a banana peel. I don't know, right? Because it's so minimum and common sense did not kick in that scenario. But how have you solved conflicts among people?
So it's really written into the lease a three strike type of ordeal. You know, we're not, I know we were joking earlier, but this is really not college housing. So we're not babysitting you. We're not, I love that, you know, this is not like a dorm mom. That's not what we're doing here. This is for actual adults who like a model, like the subscription model housing almost. This is not dorm living. So if we find that though, and that's written into the lease, if we find that, you know, you're just not able to live among adults, then we'll give you three times to kind of, you know, not handle your week, or you kind of get three times to do that. And it's just a friendly reminder that's almost automated when we get it, like someone says, hey, this was left, and, you know, hey, this is your, just letting you know, this is your chance to kind of correct that. You know, we're notating that it's the first time this has happened. And we, you know, we just kind of move on. That is written into the lease. So we're not babysitting them. Obviously, we're not putting you out over a banana peel. But we do kind of want to make sure that it stays nice and clean and safe and quiet. The second part of that I want to say is we're coming in. We're not just leaving the house there. We're coming in and checking things out. It's also has cameras. And so at night, I'm kind of checking and making sure that things still look presentable. I mean, you can really kind of tell the health of a house with the way it's looks. So I like to see it constantly clean. or if not, you can kind of see it go down. And so I'm able to kind of catch that and kind of, you know, at the end of the week, kind of run back the cameras and make sure that it's still healthy.
I hear what you're saying, that it's not a college dorm or anything, but you got 7 people who don't know each other, who are living in the same house. They're sharing bathrooms, they're sharing kitchens, they're sharing the area in the middle of the space. So there's a lot of sharing, right? So my next question is, there's got to be a recipe. I always think about like recipes, right? I'm not a good cook, but if I want to cook, I follow a recipe. So I'd have to believe there's a recipe for a really effective and efficient co-living house. Meaning you got one person, one character, Mary, Joe, whatever you want to call them. Are they like the team lead? Are they the ones that are like, I don't know, they do the most cleaning. They care the most about the property. You know, they're always there. I mean, there's got to be, I know for multifamily, there always was like a character, and we knew the characters of a multifamily, and we could prescribe what a multifamily should look like. And if it didn't have a character, it may not work as well. I would imagine it's the same or even more so for people living together. So have you found that, number one, or is my assumption off? And number two, what does that look like? If you broke it down in terms of like a recipe for those listening, what would be some really important qualities that you see in one or two of the folks that live there?
Yes, I'm so glad you brought this up. So we actually look for a manager per se, a property manager, but not in the sense that you're thinking. So this person actually lives there, and the recipe for their personality, I guess, is type A, right? So they are a type A personality. They like a good list. They like a good checklist. And they're also nurturing and not annoying, right? And so that's the person. So if anyone is, we go deeper with, because you were saying like, you know, are we overbearing? If there's anyone we go deeper with, it's that property manager for each house. And so I'll tell you a little bit about the process. So applications come in on Zillow, which is automated. And, but we put one listing where we look for a property manager. And as you can imagine, we do give them a, percentage off on the rent and things like that for their, you know, for what they do for each house, for, you know, the house. But so that, as you can imagine, that's pretty popular. But from there, we go into, sort of like a process where we say, hey, you know, can we have some references? Most of the time they, may have come from another type of co-living situation.
So like experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are their like scope of work? What are they responsible for?
Mainly, if you can't tell, a clean house is the end to all your problems. Like even in STR, a clean property is the end of all your, as long as it's, that's number one. Are they clean? Do they understand cleanliness? That's going to be the first thing. Can they oversee without being overbearing? These are adults. So that's going to be the second thing. So we're judging a character by references. We're judging character by the type of jobs they have. Were they a property manager anywhere else? Did they do that well, right? Are they a store manager at Foot Locker, right? So those are the types of things that we look for. I can go on and on.
I like that a lot, because then you have a layer between you and everybody else that can be solved that doesn't go to you. My question to you is, which is my love language, what software are you using to manage everybody?
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Slack. Slack. Or
you're
WhatsApp.
Using Slack? Oh,
or WhatsApp. Yes.
So simple.
Yes.
So you go simple, did you expect, direct.
Like, yes. Did you expect like AppFolio or something? No.
Okay. You're making it work. Okay. And who manages that? The property management, the property manager kind of like oversee that, those chats?
Yeah. The chats with every room number. And then I can see all 9 property managers because I have 9 homes.
Got it. Yeah. Got it.
So you manage the communication that way, but what about like,
leases,
rent payments, maintenance requests, right? I'm sure, you get
complaints.
Married to house who you probably heard 4 times that the oven isn't working, right? You didn't hear from one person, you heard from 4 people. So how do you manage all of those pieces?
Yeah. So that is through AppFolio.
Gotcha. So you use more of the traditional software, but in terms of communication. Okay, got it. I have one more question. Insurance. Does insurance, is that an issue with co-living? Because just like with short-term rentals came up and it was like insurance companies were confused. They didn't know anything about it. They pushed back. Are you seeing the same thing with co-living or not?
I have not. You know, Hiscox, HISCOX insurance, has really taken good care of us. Someone referred them to us years ago, and they've really, so I have not. No, and my co-living friends have not either. Because again, it's 12-month leases.
So at the end of the day, that's not, the lease is dictating that piece. Okay. Brandy, this has been so, so helpful and enlightening. And where can everyone listening learn more about you and the co-living work you're up to?
Yeah, so I have a free live masterclass on co-living, sharing this great model that can triple your monthly revenue. And it's at co-livingisking.com. I'm also on Instagram at @BrandyJones__. And I'm on Facebook at Brandy Jones.
Awesome. All this information you guys can find on our show notes. Brandy, thank you so much for being here with us today. Pleasure.
Thank you for having me. Bye.
Bye.
Bye now.
If you enjoyed this podcast and want to receive updates on our next interviews, go to our website, therealestateinvestor.com. There, you can subscribe to our show, become part of our investor community, and get updates on upcoming episodes.
If you like our show, please share with other women who would benefit. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And as always, we encourage you to take one action as a result of today's show and put it into motion so you can live both a financially free and balanced life. Thanks for spending time with us.
Ciao.